T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I did not know that was going to happen, and then when it did happen, to see it blow up on social media like that was pretty funny. My family definitely got a good kick out of it. Our group text exchange was quite amusing. Nick's siblings were not very impressed. Let's put it that way.
They probably have watched him sing into the back of the hairbrush his whole life, right?
That's exactly right. It's not that impressive.
I'll tell you, your team obviously was tickled by it. To pivot to just all the whistles that you've seen so far and the stack that you decided to blow in that Phoenix game, I don't want to be here anyway. That was fantastic. What's the method to the madness here, Coach?
Well, the message anyway that night was, I don't want to be here listening to the whistle blow all night. I hope it didn't come across the wrong way. Like, you know, it's exhibition season. I don't want to be here anyway. It was the comment was really, I'm tired of all these calls. I'm out of here. But I know what's happening. You know, the league has decided to have a few points of emphasis, and I've seen this before. You know, preseason, the whistle blows like crazy, and they're trying to get guys to adapt to slightly different rules. And as a result, you get these games that are insufferable. You know, one whistle after the next, no flow. And last night was tough. The night before was tough. But I'm very confident that when the regular season starts, it'll smooth out.
How many games will Kevin Durant foul out of during the regular season?
I'm tempted to say zero. I think he's only fouled out of a few of them his entire career, maybe three or four, if I'm not mistaken. But given what the way they treated him last night, I'll say one.
Okay.
It happened one time.
As you have watched what you are anticipating maybe being an issue for the offense that you're trying to run, are you using this preseason as a proving ground for different things and wrinkles? There's no way you guys are responsible for that many offensive fouls. So how do you coach around that?
Well, our screening has to be more disciplined. I mean, stuff that maybe we got away with in the past, we're not going to get away with as much.
It was all Zaza. Zaza was the best at the moving screen I've ever seen.
Yeah, but now he's not around to take the blame. But, no, we just have to be better. I mean, Steph, you know, one play when I got kicked out, you know, Steph set a great screen, and Kevin was, you know, 20 feet behind the play, wide open. And then at the last second, you know, Steph decided to sort of wrap his arms around Ariza, and they kind of hugged, really. I think Ariza was involved as well. They kind of sort of wrapped each other up. But that's what the officials are looking for, even well after the play's over. You know, they're looking for that stuff in the preseason, which is the source of frustration, but it's something we have to adapt to.
Warriors head coach Steve Kerr here on 95.7 The Game. You spent media day talking about how much you wanted to enjoy it this year, and there was definitely times last year you were the opponent that you were coaching against was apathy more than it was whoever you were playing that night on the schedule. And look, it's impossible to tell you to turn around and set another NBA regular season wins record. And when you're looking at where you guys are, it really is about stacking championships on top of championships. But I do have one regular season request. It's a big one. May I make it?
Sure. What do you got?
41-0 at Oracle to send the old bird out the right way. That's all, Steve.
That's it?
That's it. 41-0.
Well, I don't know if we can quite pull that off, but I would like to return to our dominant home floor ways. I mean, that, my first 3 years, I don't know exactly how many home games we lost. I'm betting it was 10 or fewer a total.
You lost more games at Oracle last year than you did in your first three, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's got to be the case. And that can't happen this year. We've got to do a better job of protecting our home floor. And obviously some of that was injuries last year, and we didn't have great luck health-wise. But we did when it mattered. You know, Steph came back at second round and was fine after that, and we got rolling. But, you know, assuming we have a decent year health-wise and everybody's pretty much together, there's no reason why we shouldn't get back to our dominant home court ways. And that's definitely a goal.
Do you think this will be like leaving Chicago Stadium for the United Center in some way?
Well, that's an interesting analogy. The one thing with the new arenas is it's hard to recreate the same intimacy that existed in a building, you know, that was built 50 years ago. There's just a bigger footprint, and you get bigger concourses and suites and everything else. I do know that Joe and Peter have made that a real priority to keep the intimacy as best as possible. But it'll be impossible to match Oracle in terms of, you know, what we've seen over the years. The noise level in there, it's incredible, but a lot of that has to do with just the building and the architecture. And it's, we're in a new era, and so we'll see. I mean, we're all excited for the new building, but we're all going to really miss Oracle as well.
I tell you what, people are saying you might need to be worried about the center position, I think, are a little out of whack, too, because eventually the answer will be DeMarcus Cousins. Like, that's a pretty good answer to have if things don't work out early with what you got. But I think Damian Jones, Jordan Bell, these guys seem to be ready for the extra responsibility coming towards them this year.
I think so. Damian's been really impressive. You know, he's so strong and big and athletic, and he's really done some good things. He's really learning on the fly. His experience in Santa Cruz the last couple of years has prepped him for this. And Jordan and Kevon, you know, have both helped us win a championship and played big minutes in the playoffs, deep in the playoffs. So these guys will get it done, and we're excited about their development as young players as they continue to get better.
Warriors head coach Steve Kerr, I love the fact that you are always aware of the romance of that is happening between fans and their teams and sports. How romantic was it to take Kevin Durant back up to Seattle?
Oh, that was amazing. The vibe, you know, that was always one of my favorite cities to visit anyway, as a player and also as a broadcaster. Seattle's, you know, the Sonics belong in Seattle, belong in the NBA. And so for one night, it was so cool to see Kevin, you know, back in the uniform of, you know, the team that drafted him and wearing the Sean Kemp jersey out onto the floor was so cool. And the fans just, they went crazy for him. It was a great night for Kevin. And I think all of us enjoyed just the whole atmosphere.
Was there any discussion like, hey, play the whole game in the Kemp jersey? We'll know which team you're on.
Yeah, we should have gone with that.
It would have been great. It really was. It looked like a night where there were just a lot of hugs. And Durant, I see him signing autographs, and he's saying hello to, like, old fans and ushers. And that was from years ago. That guy's got a heck of a memory on him.
Well, and you know, it's been, what, I guess about 9 years, 10 years, whatever it is. So Seattle, it's a basketball hotbed. It really is. There's been a ton of NBA talent that's come from Seattle, and Sonics have a great history. And so it'd be nice to get a team back there. I don't know how it's going to happen, but I would love to see it happen.
I'm sure we're going to have plenty of opportunities to talk about Boogie Cousins' rehab, but all signs are pointing to ahead of schedule, as they usually do in sports. I've never heard any team say, my guy's behind schedule for sure. But that's good news. Is there any chance you think DeMarcus might rear his head before we reach New Year's Eve?
You're trying to pin me down here.
It's a very broad window I gave you, Steve.
It is a broad window, but we'll see. I mean, he's now entering into a phase where he's getting full court work, kind of two-on-two, three-on-three stuff, where he's really working on his conditioning and his movement. And he feels good. He's pain free, and you know, we will just continue to work with him, and we're not going to rush it by any means. But when he's ready, he's ready. So we'll see.
That was Warriors head coach Steve Kerr with Damon Bruce yesterday. Steve Kerr is back every Thursday with Damon Bruce here on 95.7 in the game for another championship run. And I think I speak for everyone when I say if Boogie Cousins could debut before the start of the new year, could it be December 25th against the Lakers? Could we really just put a little more oomph on that showdown with LeBron? Dante Whitner, beat the bookie, all coming up next. But first, your chance to win $1,000.
The champs are back.
Quick pass to Draymond. Left side Clay. Three on the way. Good!
1 second. Takes the three. It's good at the buzzer. Curry!
Durant with three. With two. Takes a three off the dribble. Knocked it down. KD.
Curry with a three. It's up and good. Steph Curry over LeBron James.
It all starts Tuesday on the home of the NBA champs, 95.7. The game. Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7, The Game.
All right, the final 90-plus minutes of this show are going to cook, so hang tight. Dante Whitner's coming up in about 12 minutes at 8:30. That's going to be followed by Beat the Bookie at 8:45, at which time we'll be giving away Jim Gaffigan tickets as well. Now, following that, Mike Brown will join us at 9:30, the three-time NBA champ and Warriors associate head coach Mike Brown at 9:30. And then to bring down the curtain, as we do each and every Friday, a stirring rendition of Low versus Dibs. Perhaps today we'll figure out who goes first, and we'll be able to make our way through the picks accordingly. Although, even though this is year three, I doubt it.
Yeah.
I doubt it. I doubt we'll find a way to just in a structured manner, work our way from game one to the end without some sort of shenanigans, such as I'd like to go back two games and change my pick.
Week. Captain Switchola over there. There will be no Switcholas. He's off to a good start, though. He's within six overall. He's up one on the week, as I took Big Blue like a fool, and he took the Eagles, who won.
Yeah. I mean, the point spread suggested that's what was happening. The Eagles were a three-point favorite, and then boom, it all of a sudden got washed down to one. That's significant. That is a significant move coming off the key number of three. I really don't think you made that bad of a play. It's easy now to look back and go, and if you bet the Giants, it was probably about three plays in where you were like, yeah, this thing's done. But going into it, you see a move like that, and it's a Thursday night game, a division rival, a home team getting points. Generally, that's the spot you want to find yourself. Let me ask you this. For example, the Rams are in Denver this weekend. Everybody loves the Rams, but are you going to lay a touchdown in Denver knowing the Broncos are coming off that loss? It's a non-conference opponent. The game's at altitude. I mean, just last week, the Rams were in Seattle laying a touchdown and couldn't get it done. Beat the bookie, swung and missed on that game. Same situation could be coming here. I don't have that game in Beat the Bookie, but for you guys, I mean, that's your classic trap spot right there. That's going to be a tough spot for the Rams to get past.
And you can't envision the Rams or the Chiefs, for that matter, going 16-0. So then as you start to look at the schedule, you figure where do the losses come. There's probably going to be one or two quality losses and then another one, maybe two games that they just give away because it's a bad spot. And this might be one of those spots where you go to Denver at altitude coming off a tough game and maybe you give this one away.
Right now, would the ultimate Super Bowl matchup be Rams-Chiefs? Would everyone here think that's the best possible matchup? Now, clearly, you're not going to be able to use a team like the Giants. But you can take middle-of-the-road teams and suggest that they might come back. Pittsburgh, for example. Outside of the picks we made before the season, if I told you right now it's going to be Rams-Chiefs, you good with that? Do you like that idea?
Absolutely, I'm good with it. I think you got two high-powered offenses, guys that you can't stop these two offenses. It would be great for football, great for the National Football League. When you look at Mahomes, how he's able to run and extend plays outside the pocket, throw the ball down the field, rifle arm, Jared Goff, that running game they have, two good young quarterbacks, two young good running backs, and a bunch of guys, not necessarily great receivers, but a bunch of speed on the field. You got to love that matchup.
Last night, I did a quick hit with the boys from KTVU after the Thursday night game. One of the questions they asked, which I wanted to ask you guys, is Shanahan and Lynch. We're now a little over a year into the Shanahan-Lynch tandem. Do you think they have the team on the right track? I mean, we had higher expectations this year. The team's been ravaged by injuries.
Do you feel confident that these two have the team on the right track?
I do, and I think the injuries have been a big setback, not only to Jimmy Garoppolo, but other positions as well. I think this next year's draft is critical, though, to seeing if they're going to continue down the road toward making this franchise decent again, because you've made some bad picks, you've made some good picks, and you're trying to cleanse the roster of the bulky picks, and as you're doing that, you've got to find guys who are going to be successful in your system. They've been pretty good at that. There's been some hits and some misses. It's looking more like Adrian Colbert might have been a miss, where last year it seemed like he was a hit. So if this season ends with 2, 3, or 4 wins and not a lot of player improvement, it's going to put more attention on the draft and them needing to be successful there.
You like the direction?
I do, but right now this year was tough, Joe, and I think that it's just no different than college. You got a 4-year plan, and some guys get the 5-year plan. You got a lot of guys that didn't necessarily show that they're great, so they're, you know, kind of that redshirt year where they're on practice squad, or whether those guys aren't that playing that much. So they have a chance to get bigger, get stronger, get faster, do all those things. And now you're talking about this is year 2, next year year 3. Year 3 and 4 and 5, those are big years for this team, this organization. Definitely 3 and 4, because now that's their guys, you go through that weeding process. You can't just go through and cut everyone in year 1. Year 2, they still hadn't cut it, you know, got the guys that were Trent Baalke's guys. So you're starting that process with a good mix of veterans, with a good mix of young guys. Year 3, you do the same thing. And year 4, you're right there. So this is a building process. People just get it after the first year, and it's like, oh, my God, they supposed to go to the playoffs and all those things. A lot of times they say, oh, cool. What happened when this team all of a sudden went to the playoffs? Yeah, but you got to realize, talking about the Rams, that is. Everyone's, oh, Jeff Fisher, look what happened now. One coach comes in and out. But look at all the talent that they already had. So there was a process already taking place, and that's why the Rams are where they're at, because there was already some building blocks in place, and now you just needed that great chef to come in there and put that food and make a great meal, and that's what he's able to do.
What's a reasonable amount of time to rebuild a football team? Imagine a team is pretty much bottomed out like the Niners. Imagine teams bottomed out like the Raiders right now. Depending on what pieces you have, both teams aren't exactly looking at positive times, and it's going to take more time to get them back to relevancy. What's a reasonable amount of time? Like, if you were able to control people's thoughts, because people, you know, they want everything right now, right? That's the world we live in. What's a reasonable amount of time without pushing too far?
I think 3 years, Lo.
3?
I'm with you. I would say 3 to 4. I would be more on that 4 side, because the first year, you don't even know what you got.
Right.
And then, okay, so if you're cleaning house and bringing in people, that's 1 year. 2 years, you're getting guys trying to be on the same page. Now they're starting to learn the system. Whether it's if you had to get a quarterback, now the quarterback's been in that system for 2 years. Still, do you have the receiver? In that third year, maybe you got the receiver. Now you're starting to gel. So 3 to 4, I think that fourth year, I think 4 years to be safe, meaning if it's a total rebuild, I think it's got to be 4 years.
I would say 4, but I'm going with 3 because you already got the hardest part solved, and that's the quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. And you got him in at the tail end of the first year. And I know he's hurt this year, but you still will go into year 3 with him likely close to being at 100%. We've seen Carson Wentz now, 9 months after his injury, similar injury. He's now back closer to 100%. He's starting and he's playing well. The same expectation for Jimmy G should be in place. So to me, the fact that you found your quarterback moves the timeline up a little bit, because there's not that question, which is the number one biggest question. And as you go down the positional order and you start to think about what's next most important, cornerback, they still need it. Offensive line help, they still need it. Pass rusher, they still need it. And they've tried to get pass rushers and they've missed. Solomon Thomas right now looks like a miss. So had you hit on that player, had you gotten another DeForest Buckner type of guy, let's just say, you would be closer to that 3-year timeline than you would with a 4-year timeline, because right now you're looking at Eric Armstead and maybe you need to change him out. Solomon Thomas, you don't know what you have with that player. Linebacker-wise, looks like you're good with Warner and Foster, but the secondary, we all know, you need 2, if not 3 more players. So as much as 3 years should be the timeline, because you've had misses, it doesn't look like they're going to make it in 3 years.
And here's what you got to realize too, Dan. I totally understand what you're saying. Your point well taken. But look at it this way: you got a quarterback that's, you know, that's in the system for a year. Okay, what receiver is he going to have in that system for 4 years with him? You look at it, and what kind of receiver is he? Because when you think about the receiver quarterback position, look at certain guys. Look at, you know, what Tom Brady's been able to have, Gronkowski. Look at Phillip Rivers, what he's been able to have, a tight end, Antonio Gates. So you have your basic pillar that you have in place with those particular guys. guys. This guy hasn't had those things in place, so that's why I'm saying it's a maybe another year. The receivers they have on here, if you talk about a four-year period, there might not be one receiver that's had 4 years. It takes continuity for that quarterback and the receiver to be on the same page, hot reads, what they're seeing, the side adjustments, all those different deals. That's just not a year thing. That's a something that's constantly evolving. So I understand those three, but yeah, if I knew I had my receiver and my quarterback, I got my quarterback in year one, in year two, I knew I had this receiver is going to be with me 4 or 5 years like that. Absolutely, because you do need some type of continuity, and I have not seen that. I don't think that you have either, that in that receiver position that there's any type of continuity to start really saying that they're moving in that
direction.
You're
seeing it in the tight end and the fullback, but you're right. And running back-wise, it was starting to be, okay, this is going to be Matt Breida's year. We'll see what we have. Right, and now Breida's hurt, and you're down to Alfred Morris maybe being the team leader at the end of the year in carries, which nobody saw that coming. So you got McKinnon on the shelf. You've got Garoppolo on the shelf. They're rehabbing together. To me, there's no reason why they can't be on the same page. I mean, they're sitting next to each other right now doing leg extensions or whatever stage they're at in their relative rehabs. There's no reason why they shouldn't be on the same page the moment they both get healthy.
If the Niners are smart, they'd have some camera crews, some social media crews around those two as they go through this, and they'd get little clips here and there and splice it all together next year for some kind of goofy, like, Full House type video.
Right.
Where it's like, hey, we're buddies, arms around each other. Like the whole goofy thing with the goofy music in the background. I don't know.
ACL buddies.
Like that. Yeah, they play the whole thing up. The Brandons with their little interviews they do. Those two, you very rarely hear them say anything. But that commercial all season long with Crawford interviewing Belt, that's fantastic. I laughed every single time those two did that. Like, that's what they should be playing up down there, especially for McKinnon, who no one's gotten a chance to know yet.
Right,
Garoppolo's,
right.
No, not McKinnon.
No, it's good. I can see the two of them in a three-legged race with their two bad knees tied together, trying to, you know, do the family picnic stuff.
Exactly.
It's comedy.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. All right, so Dante Whitner in 2 minutes, beat the bookie at 8:45, Lowe versus Dibs 9:45, but right before that, Mike Brown, Warriors assistant head coach, 9:30. Also a reminder, we have got Warriors Thunder tickets to give away for the season opener on Tuesday. We're giving them away either on Monday or Tuesday. I don't have all the details yet, but I do want you to know that starting Monday, you're going to have a chance to win Warriors Thunder tickets for the season opener. Before Whitner comes on, if we go basically four seasons, 2017 was year one of Lynch and Shanahan. 2018's this year, could be considered a lost year. Then there's 2019, then 2020. What do they have to do in 2020 for you to be convinced these guys are the future? Lynch at GM, Shanahan at head coach. What do you need to see in 2020, two seasons from now?
Playoff berth. And you don't have to see a playoff win or a conference championship appearance or a Super Bowl. Just make it to the playoffs. Because as you've mentioned, where we've been in this 49er organization post-Harbaugh has been a disaster. They have had no success, and the roster's been a mess. You got rid of the GM, and now you're getting rid of a lot of his players, so you really are starting from scratch. So to Lowe's point about a four-year timeline, that would be 2020. If you're going to show real growth and real success, you've got to get to the playoffs, because remember, last year they were a 6-10 team. You won five in a row. That wasn't a fluke. I mean, the Ram game, sure, you can dismiss it. They played their subs. You beat a good Jacksonville team, and you had three other wins along the way, so you were closer last year than you are now, and I know part of that was due to injury, but for me, you look at next year with everybody coming back healthy, you're going to want to see a big step up from whatever this ends up being, and then the year after that, another step forward would be 8, 9, 10 wins and a playoff berth.
Yeah, I expect a playoff win, not just a berth. When by that year four, they should be right there, like you just alluded to, Daniel. Just the fact that they got guys are going to be, the continuity should be there. You're going to have a hungry Jimmy G. The guys is going to be a lot more savvy. In year four, this guy knows how to get down. He knows how to slide. You got Kittle now will be a true, true seasoned veteran guy. Hopefully, your running back situation will be secure. You got offensive linemen you're going to draft probably this next year. Free agency, you're going to make another splash. Guys want to come here. That's the good thing about San Francisco. This is a destination that a lot of free agents want to come play for Kyle Shanahan. People want to come play for John Lynch in this organization. They're coached well. You got a good city. This is a great place. Now you got to start putting the best foot forward and going out and grabbing guys. And that's where Jimmy G and a lot of these veteran guys, like a la Sherman and those guys, they're going to be here for the next year. They need to start making sure that transition in this thing, that when you're passing the baton forward, that guys are going to be coming here to be able to play and play at a high level.
I'll tell you something. So no one's been talking about this yet because it's way too early to bring this up. But just like this year, where there was so much excitement and such high expectations coming into the season where the team was a bit overvalued, I got a very good feeling that based on everything that's going to take place this year, next year they're going to roll into the season extremely undervalued. People are going to think to themselves, I'm not getting tricked by this Niner team again. Forget that. There won't be as much hype. It'll be, all right, we're into the Garoppolo thing. I'm not going to listen to a whole thing of, well, now he's back from the ACL. Here he comes. People are going to move on to the next big thing. Very quietly, I think Vegas ends up setting a lower number, and I think the Niners has the overplay on the win total next year. Granted, there's a lot of variables that still need to be ironed out, but it just feels like that classic, people are going to not be excited at all based on what just happened. They feel like they got, you know, the old banana in the tailpipe, and then next year everyone writes them off, and then they're able to exceed expectations. Doesn't mean a playoff berth, but it means better than expected, which is good news for Niner fans out there.
Is that number out yet?
No,
we locked it, Coach. You look at their turnover differential.
Boy, that happened quick.
Their turnover differential is so bad that they're going to most likely progress to the mean, and so more wins will come accordingly.
All right, so let's file that one away. Mark the tape, as we like to say around
Mark it.
Three-time Pro Bowler, former 49ers safety. Check him out now as a 49ers analyst for NBC Sports Bay Area. He is doing a tremendous job. Dante Whitner joining us here on 95.7 The Game. What's up, Hitman? How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How you guys doing?
We're doing well, and we appreciate the time on this Friday. Thank you very much. Tell me about Lambeau Field. Tell me about Monday Night Football. This team, this young, injury-riddled team, is going to try to find a way to shock the world in front of the national audience Monday night. What's it like walking into Lambeau? What's a Monday night game like? How do you put all the emotion aside to get the job done?
Well, the mystique is real. I'm going to tell you that. Walking into Lambeau Field, you can feel a tradition. You can feel, you know, just the energy of being in that stadium. That's what real football is. It's like a real football game on that field. It's going to be a tremendous feat for these guys. These guys have to go out there and be more detailed than they've ever been, tackle better than they ever been, think more than they ever done. Because if you want to get out there and beat an Aaron Rodgers football team, you have to be detailed. And that's what they have to be this week. They have to grow up this week. If they grow up this week, they win the football game. If they don't, they lose.
Is it the back end that needs to grow up more, or would you say it's the pass rush, guys like Solomon Thomas, who need to make an impact and really keep Aaron Rodgers from getting comfortable?
Well, I think it's everybody. Whenever you're playing defensive football against a great quarterback, he looks at the front, he looks at your nickelback alignment, he looks at your corners alignment, he looks at your safeties to get any type of clue or any type of key to beat you. So if everybody's not in tune together, then he's going to get that one key. He's going to know exactly where to go with the football. However, the line's going to protect him. He's going to improvise, and he's going to get a big play. That's all Aaron Rodgers does. So if everybody's not in tune, then he's going to make a lot of plays.
Offensively, when you think about so many injuries that they've had, you're going from first-string running back, second-string running back, now down to your third- and fourth-string running backs. How do you continue to try to work on a running game or try to keep the defense honest by showing some sort of run? What do you need to do?
Well, I truly believe that Kyle Shanahan is an offensive mastermind genius in the National Football League. If you look at what they've been doing over the past couple of weeks without their best players, with a lot of starters going down, he's still been able to manufacture points. I don't know how he's doing it. I don't know when he comes up with the things that he's doing, but, you know, nowadays he's not throwing the ball down the football field, you know, deep. He's throwing a lot of tight end screens, fullback screens, a lot of, Y-high and F-Y-high, a lot of plays that are untraditional, but they're getting a lot of yards. And he's doing it with a lot of backup guys. My main concern is not with the offense. They're going to run the football. They're going to get yards. They're going to go play on action pass and get the football to the wide receivers and the tight ends, allow them to make plays. But my main concern is the defense. If you get over 17 points on the defense side of the football, you're actually supposed to win the game. So they're putting up points no matter who's in there. The defense needs to come to the party. And if they do, they'll win some games.
Dante Whitner joining us here on 95.7 The Game. You had some interesting comments about Solomon Thomas recently, and I was hoping you could reiterate them with us here in the morning. The idea that maybe you could get more out of Solomon Thomas if you utilized him in a different way. Would you care to take us through that?
Yeah, you can put him in a 3-4 defense and put him standing up as a rush outside linebacker. If you go and you look at his Stanford tape, a lot of times you put him on the edge and allow him to play, the screens and the option. And this guy is a guy that can run and make tackles in space. He's not a traditional defensive tackle in a 4-3 scheme. I don't even understand why teams even use 4-3 scheme anyway, when any time the quarterback gets back there, he can basically tell what coverage or where the blitz is coming from in a 4-3. If you stand this guy up and allow him to rush the quarterback, drop every now and then, put him in the middle of the defense, allow him to do some of those wraparound 8-gap blitzes, and this guy can cause havoc. Don't use him as a traditional 4-3 defensive tackle. Let him move all around up in a 3-4, and he can make a ton of plays.
When you talk about his body structure, here's a guy, you know, this, you know, kind of, you know, stout, you know, physical type of guy, like you alluded to. You're talking about like hips and being able to, you know, out in space. You're talking about out on the perimeter, being able necessarily to drop into the flat, hook the curl, you know, running backs going on that side, saying, okay, now you now with this the league the way it is, you can't grab them, you can't hold them. How are you going to cover and how would you cover some of those deficiencies?
Well, he's a rush defensive end.
So you'd make only rush all the time. Okay,
end,
got you.
A lot of times you're just rushing. A lot of times you're not dropping. When we had Amon Brooks, remember Sean Merriman?
Yeah.
A lot of these guys were outside 3-4 defensive ends. And Solomon Thomas is not that much bigger, or he probably is the same size as these guys. These guys are big guys that can rush the quarterback with athletic ability, that can run down things from the inside. And do you want to see Solomon Thomas standing up going against a tight end, a fullback, or a running back, or even just even a tackle one-on-one from standing up? I don't think anybody wants to see that.
Dante Whitner here on 95.7 The Game. Looking at more pieces potentially for the defensive line, Nick Bosa out of Ohio State could be the number one overall draft pick, and the Niners could be selecting there. How do you think Bosa would fit not only with what you're talking about defensively, but with this Niner team and Robert Saleh in general?
Well, I don't know if he fits into a 4-3 also. You know, he's not a traditional 4-3 defensive end. He's a guy that can move around also. The 3-4 is the best defense in the National Football League. It allows you to disguise. It allows the quarterback not to be able to read your mail when he's standing back there, because everything is symmetric right down the line. You have three defensive linemen down there. You have two outside backers, two inside backers. How can a quarterback get a read on that? If the safeties are in tune and know what they're doing, and the corners also, you don't know what's coming. Even when you go to your sub packages, you don't know what's coming. If you have a good defensive coordinator and a good scheme, you don't know what's coming. That's what we had here before. Nobody could tell which guy was the rush or the jack or who was blitzing, who wasn't. If you're coached up and you can get the job done, you can think through the game and play it, man, a 3-4 is the best way to go.
So you really believe right now, I totally understand, especially when a league now doesn't run the ball as much as it used to, because people like running against a 3-4 because you usually have a guard gap and sometimes an end is head up to a wide nine at, you know, line up outside. So now with this offense, with this defense that you're talking about in San Fran, with the talent that they have in the cupboards, do you think, I think you, what you're talking about, Solomon, but with other guys, do they have enough talent? You think a guy at the middle, at the nose, can hold that? Do you think they have enough talent to be a good 3-4 defense?
No, I don't. You know, whenever you go from 4-3 to 3-4, whenever you're changing, you know, schemes, you have to change personnel. In 4-3, you have two big defensive tackles that's run stoppers. In a 3-4, you have one, a gigantic guy in the middle.
Sure.
That's going to have two, three guys.
Basically.
You know, so it's different. In a 3-4, you probably need two inside backers that can butt guys off, not throw a shoulder in there, and still make a tackle. If you can do that and you can play a light box and put more in coverage, you can win. But with the personnel that they have right now, whenever you have a 3-3 to a 3-4, you have to bring in entirely a new set of guys and a new set of skill set to bring that in. But it's beneficial to being able to disguise and being able to win football games. The 3-4 is the best defense.
Three-time Pro Bowler, former 49ers safety, excuse me. Check him out now as a tremendous 49ers analyst over at NBC Sports Bay Area. Dante Whitner with us on 95.7 The Game. Dante, we always appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much for the insights. Have a great weekend.
Oh, thanks for having me,
guys. I love
See,
that guy.
This is what I'm talking about.
I love talking to him.
Informative.
The way you two just went back and forth, there's something to that. Not just on radio.
Yeah.
Like, we should put together a watch party for the bye weeks. Or, you know, they both play that Thursday night, which means that Sunday is wide open. You, him,
Whitner, I'd love
get
to work
people
with him.
Together.
He's,
have you guys up there breaking down some tape, let people teach a little bit. Dibs runs his material.
Oh, yeah.
I'll hand out
Bell
winners and locks.
Sure.
Guru can get everyone excited. He can play the hype man role, previously occupied by Flavor Flav.
What can Cody do?
Produce it.
I can play a pretty good wide nine.
Guys,
pass.
That's a pass.
Nice,
it's a
Cody.
Hard pass. So he's saying 3-4 is a preferred defense, but they don't have the personnel to run the 3-4. And I'm glad you asked that question because ultimately he's pushing for the 3-4. And you said, well, why don't they just go for the 3-4? Well, they don't have the personnel to run the 3-4. So they are basically, as you like to say, stuck in the middle. You got 4-3 personnel that's not working, and you can't switch to a 3-4 because you don't have a big run stopper in the middle.
Yeah, you got two defensive mainstays right now. Two, that's it. You know you want DeForest Buckner in the mix based on what you've seen, and you know you're going to want Reuben Foster in the mix. Granted, Fred Warner and some of the other guys, they've shown potential, but right now you know that if you have to sit there and commit, you've already made the commitment to Foster, and you want to make the commitment to Buckner. So what's the best defense to build around those two? Remember, don't build the system and then force the players into it. Build the system around what the players do best. Give them the best opportunity to succeed. Tennessee drafting Mariota and then trying to force him to play under center. Why would you do that when you watch the kid at Oregon? He had all this success in this system. So why would you take him away from what made him so successful? For years, teams followed that line of thinking. It was brutal. And now suddenly coaches are saying, you know what? Baker Mayfield looks pretty good in this Oklahoma system. Maybe if we create this system and put Baker Mayfield in it, he could continue having the same success since we've been watching it play out. Rather than, let's take Baker from what he does. Let's force him to do what we do. Let's pay him a lot of money for it.
Let's put him under the center and have him run a drop-back system. See if that works for him.
Which, by the way, Lowe saw this stat the other day. I think there were 44 quarterback sneaks that have been run this year on 4th-and-1 or 3rd-and-1. Mm. 42 of them have been successful.
Wow.
Have
so,
any again successful?
I believe. Yeah. I'm close. I can't guarantee
are.
I have the number, but I know I'm real close. I believe it's 42 of 44 quarterback sneaks on 3rd-and-short or 4th-and-short.
It's great. You wouldn't got the stats, and I already did. That just goes to tell you, confirmation, Dibs, that we talk about all the time. Friggin' line up, run quarterback sneak. If it's good enough for Tom Brady, if it's good enough for Drew Brees, it should be good enough
if
for the rest of the league.
If it's 42 for 44, you should probably think about doing that. Instead of running the play action, let's go to the fullback or trying to do some other craziness.
Even try to hand it off to the tailback that I was saying, because go look at the tailback number, because he's at 6 yards deep, and now you want the quarterback to go back to 3 and hand it to him at 5, and now you expect him to go 6. For what? For who?
See, I still like the punt there. I still like the punt. I got to be honest. Just kick it away and live to fight another week.
Quick kick. Goose the quarterback. Quarterback sneak. Just make it simple, coach.
Real question.
Yes.
Who were the two turds that didn't get it?
Yeah. Maybe Baker Mayfield is one, because the whole thing was set up on the Baker Mayfield commentary. So it came on the backs of, we were talking Baker Mayfield, so that's who I would guess. But
so
it's
one
probably
of the
wrong.
Wait, was that was a Mayfield sneak where they said he didn't get it? If memory serves, is that what happened there? It was. I thought Chubb had the ball.
That was
Chubb
a handoff.
That was a handoff, and then they didn't go for
but
it.
They should have gone for it and didn't.
Then they punted it, right?
But Chubb was short upon further review. His forearm was down before the line to gain.
That was one of three carries. The other two went for about 400 yards.
Yeah,
which
give or
that
take.
May be a bit of an exaggeration, but for right now, not an exaggeration. We've got three pairs of tickets to see Jim Gaffigan on his...
Oh, Jim! That was coming.
That felt right.
It felt so
that
good.
Just felt
it was
right.
One of the best ones ever. Yeah, that was really good.
Old Jim.
Three pairs of tickets to see Jim Gaffigan on his Quality Time tour when he cut... Do you think anyone has ever actually referred to him as Old Jim? Like, he's walked through, it's Old Jim.
Old Jim.
That's how it shows him now.
Really good. You sold it hard. It's great.
Oh, man. He'll be at the Masonic Thursday, May 30th. Now, these tickets aren't even on sale yet, but if you fail to win them here, don't fret. I don't know why I chose that word. They go on sale today at 10 a.m. So in about an hour and 15 minutes, the Jim Gaffigan tickets will be on sale. Ticketmaster.com. That's Ticketmaster.com. First three callers, 888-957-9570. Your boys, Jolo and Dibs, we got you covered. Three pairs of tickets to see Jim Gaffigan on his Quality Time Tour, 888-957-9570. Friday, 845. You know how we do.
Now, it's time for
Meet the Bookie with Joe Fortenbaugh.
Thank you, Greg. Meet the Bookie, week six. Last week, overall, 5-3. 3-1 in college football, which is finally starting to turn around. 2-2 in the NFL. Now, there were two bonus picks we gave out last week. We do not count the bonus picks towards the total. Last week's bonus picks, Georgia Southern over South Alabama, winner. 6-point teaser, Rams and Saints, winner. So we threw a couple extra winners on there, but the official picks went 5-3. Overall this season, 28 wins, 21 defeats, one draw for a winning percentage of 57%. College football is 16-13-1. Pro football is 12-8. Here come your college picks. Felt like Westworld there for a second.
I did.
This is a bit dark.
It's the weekend, right? If I'm not mistaken, I could be mistaken.
It's Friday, Dibs. Yeah.
French Montana.
There you go.
Here you go. All right. Pick number one, Colorado +7 at USC. Saturday, 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific, Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. Two factors working in USC's favor here, which include home field advantage and a bye week to get both healthy and prepared. But the big question is whether or not that will be enough to cover a touchdown point spread against a Colorado program that is 5-0 straight up and 4-1 against the spread so far this season. This Buffalo's defense can make some plays, as evidenced by the fact that the opposition is averaging just 18.4 points per game this season against them. Take note that the winner here could very well emerge as the Pac-12 South champion. So you can bet Colorado, who has lost 12 straight in this series, very much out to make some noise against the Clay Helton squad that has covered the number in just 5 of their last 21 games overall. Take the Buffaloes in the touchdown.
Whoever this guy is, the slapstick.
Forgot we were doing Manning drops today. Nice. Game number 2, Army, -14.5 at San Jose State. Saturday, 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific, CEFCU Stadium. Army's last 3 weeks, in order, include, number one, an overtime heartbreaker in Norman against Oklahoma. Number two, a 29-point road win over previously undefeated Buffalo. And number three, last week, a bye. That means the Cadets are nice and refreshed heading into Saturday's matchup with a winless Spartan squad that is 1-5 against the number over their last 6 non-conference games. This is a significant number to lay on the road, but San Jose State has proven that. I hate to say it, but when the game is in doubt, like last week, they'll find a way to lose. Lay the chalky 14.5 with Army.
None of that tickled my pickle.
Game number 3, West Virginia laying 6.5 at Iowa State. Saturday, 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, Jack Trice Stadium. Now, the Bear on ESPN likes Iowa State here, and I hate finding myself on the opposite side of the Bear, but West Virginia has been really good to us this season, and Saturday presents another opportunity, in my opinion, to jump on the Dana Holgorsen, Will Grier experience. For starters, the Mounties are 5-0 straight up and 4-1 against the spread this season, and they're heading to their bye next week. So expect all hands on deck in an effort to conclude a brilliant first half of the season against the Cyclone squad, primed for a monster letdown after last weekend's 48-42 upset win over Oklahoma State as 10-point dogs. So on one hand, West Virginia's in the top 10 and they're thinking college football playoff. They got one more game to get through before the bye. Meanwhile, Iowa State, which is a house of horrors for many, just came off a monster upset of Okie State, so a potential letdown spot is here in play. Lay the 6.5 with West Virginia.
Hey, man.
What up, Pete?
You want to come over? I'll make nachos.
California laying 6.5 against UCLA Saturday, 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, California Memorial Stadium. The Bears have failed to cover the number in 3 straight and are riding a 2-game losing streak after that impressive 3-0 start, but this is a play against Chip Kelly and UCLA more than anything else, as the Bruins are 0-5 this season while averaging just 18 points per game. Think about that. Chip Kelly's offense is averaging 18 points per game. UCLA struggles to cover on the road. They struggle to cover following ATS wins, and they covered the spread last week against Washington and just so happens to be 0-5 against the number over their last five trips to Memorial Stadium. The Bears are going to finally cut down on the turnovers that have plagued them the last couple weeks, and they're going to get right here to avenge last year's last-second heartbreaker. So lay the 6.5 with Cal.
Thank you very much. I have nothing left to look forward to.
Except for New Mexico in a pick'em against Colorado State, Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 Pacific, Canvas Stadium. This is the seventh straight weekend with a game for Colorado State, who finally notched win number 2 last Saturday against San Jose State, despite blowing a 28-0 halftime lead to fall behind 30-28 in the fourth quarter. The Rams have covered the number just twice over the last 13 games and only once over the last 10 home contests. Almost too quietly, the Lobos are off to a 3-2 start thanks to an offense led by former Tennessee Volunteer Sharyan, and I don't even know if I'm saying that right, Sharyan Jones. Well, once he wins the Heisman, we'll give it to him. He's engineering an attack that is averaging 42.2 points per game. The kid was at Tennessee and transferred to New Mexico, and he is balling. New Mexico has to be thinking about the fact that it's just 3 wins away from bowl eligibility, and this one has all the makings of a winnable matchup, so ride the Lobos at the price of pick'em.
Okay, I'm sorry. Do you want to lose? I throw, you catch. It's not that hard, okay? All right, get the f*** out of here.
Your college football recap: Colorado +7 over USC, Army -14.5 over San Jose State, West Virginia -6.5 over Iowa State, Cal -6.5 over UCLA, New Mexico pick'em over Colorado State. Here comes the NFL. Game number 1, Cleveland +1 hosting the Los Angeles Chargers Sunday, 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific, First Energy Stadium. The Cleveland jokes never get old, but when it comes to handicapping sports, you need to eliminate all emotion, humor included, from the equation. The reality here is that too many people view this iteration of the Browns as the same thing we've seen time and time again, which is why you get a point spread like Cleveland +1 when the reality is the Browns should probably be laying a couple points here. The truth of the matter is that the Browns lead the league in takeaways and rank 2nd in rushing. Take note that the Chargers are 0-6 against the number over their last 6 encounters with the Browns and 0-4 against the spread over their last 4 games following an ATS win. Long travel, early start time, 2 more reasons we're going to fade the Bolts and ride with the Cleveland Browns in this spot.
I got to tell you, it's been the greatest 1,000 days of my life.
Who are we listening to? This is fantastic.
Lyrics Born, Calling Out. This is a song that Rado showed us last week.
Good stuff. It's a local group, right? You can just play this through the rest of the show. I think we'd all be okay with that.
It's awesome.
Well, it might get in the way of the takes. Nah, it's better than the takes. All right, game number 2, Seattle laying 2.5 against Oakland at Wembley Stadium in London, England. Hate to do it, Raider fans, but I think this is the lock of the week. Rather than prove to be the catalyst for something bigger and better, the Raiders went from winning their first game of the season in week 4 to producing their biggest dud of the year just 7 days later. Oakland has covered the number in just 5 of their last 19 games, and they have virtually no pass rush to speak of, which unfortunately means that the Silver and Black are unlikely to take advantage of Seattle's Achilles heel. Look for big games from Russell Wilson and Chris Carson in this one, as the Seahawks find a way to win this game by at least a field goal.
Get your head out of your ass! You suck!
The other interesting point, the Raiders traveled to England last night. Last night they got on their charter and flew across rather than get there a week early, so who knows how the body clocks will line up. Game number 3, Pittsburgh +2 at Cincinnati. Saturday is not the day it's being played. Sunday, 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific, Paul Brown Stadium. The Steelers have been absolutely brutal this season, but this is a game every single handicapper worth a damn has circled on the calendar for 2 reasons. First, Pittsburgh is an astonishing 18-7-1 against the spread over their last 26 games against the Bengals. All they do is cover against the Bengals. And not only that, in their last 22 games at Cincinnati, they're 16-4-2 against the spread. History is not on Cincinnati's side. For some reason, Marvin Lewis and the Bengals cannot figure out the Steelers. Take the 2 points with Pittsburgh. They win it outright.
Thanks to you, that's over now. And you've ruined that for me.
Tennessee, +3 against Baltimore. Sunday, 425 Eastern, 125 Pacific, Nissan Stadium. Everybody saw the Titans flame out at Buffalo last week, so there's a good chance we're scoring at least a modicum of value in a home dog that just so happens to find itself in a bounce-back spot against a Ravens squad that has covered the number just one time in its last five trips to Nashville. Further, the Titans are 5-0 against the spread over the last five home games and 7-3 against the spread over the last 10 games overall. This is our Hold Your Nose special of the week. Give me the Titans plus the field goal.
I can't even look at you. You know what? Let's take a part of that for 20 minutes.
NFL recap. Cleveland +1 over the Chargers. Seattle -2.5 over the Raiders. Pittsburgh +2 over Cincinnati. Tennessee +3 over Baltimore. 6-point teaser bonus play if you like it. It's the most obvious one on the board. Take the Vikings and tease them from -10 to -4 against Arizona. And then on Monday night, take the Packers from -9.5 to -3.5 against the 49ers. Nothing fancy with that. They're just two obvious plays if you're going to put a teaser together.
One pick that I just love that you just said.
Oh, no.
Absolutely. I'd put it, whatever, and then tease it down, whatever you want to do, or just take it, is the last one. Minnesota. Minnesota is going to...
Oh, you're talking about the teaser play at the end.
Yeah.
You think they just motorboat Arizona?
Without a doubt.
I thought about it, and I was like, man, do I want to lay 10?
Here's why. What had happened the last time they was in that situation in Buffalo? At home. Buffalo came to Minnesota and kicked the team.
Great point.
They got smacked.
They got smacked around. You don't think the coach, you think this is a cakewalk? Look what you're doing. Look what happened. This week, you ain't going to see a Minnesota team.
Arizona just got their win, too. They're feeling good. They're living, they're loving.
Yeah, this is, I like that one. All right. I like your game.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Minnesota, fired up.
Like that. All right. But did step out on a limb on that, Dib, so no blame.
I thought you were going to say you like his pick of Cleveland +1, which it was a hold-your-nose special for me of Browns. I've about had it with those Browns.
Great.
That we have for some reason, this show is so heavily invested in the Cleveland Browns every year.
It's so heavy.
There are already so many bets and so many jokes, but remove all of it. I really think, and I've made this analogy before, that if the aliens came down, and this is the only year of NFL football they've ever seen, right? They have no idea about Joe Montana and all the stuff in the past. None of it. The Browns wouldn't be a laughingstock to them. Like, the Browns would be at least an average team. They'd look at the Browns, they'd be like, all right, Browns ain't so bad.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good D, nice young quarterback. They got some pieces.
Lead the league in turnover differential.
Yeah.
Got a couple runners back there. The guys can run the ball. They got some guys running downhill.
I think you still have this perception that they're this big laughing stock. And I understand it takes a while to move away from that after 10 years of cluelessness.
But
I think there's value in these lines. I don't think they should be catching a point at home against the Chargers. I think it should be maybe, Cleveland -2. I think that would be a more fair line. And it's not to knock the Chargers. Early start time, you got to travel. Cleveland can play D. They've been hanging tight in games pretty much all season long, even when they lose. I think there's value. I think people still underlook that.
I know it's your beat the bookie, but I'm going to give you one lock, and it's in the Browns game. Over under 60 minutes played. Take the over.
Yeah.
Because that game's going overtime.
That's true.
That's a guarantee.
That's
all they do is play OT.
Yeah.
No matter what.
All right. All right. Here's how it's going to shake down. Mike Brown is going to join us at 9:30. Lowe versus Dibs, the moment you've all been waiting for, at 9:45. And Takes Galore next, here on Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
It's the final tune-up before the regular season tips off. It's the Lakers come to the SAP Center for a matchup with the defending champs.
Durant flying down the lane with a two-hand slam.
The action tips off tonight at 7:30 on the radio home of the Golden State Warriors, 95.7. The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.